In camp, outside Togarty Pass, Bobby Harris sat apart from the hands who had treated him like an equal for more than a year. On their journey northward, his pose of manhood had slipped as time wore on. The boy had been buoyed up by a spirit of adventure alone for the last 2 days. Now, he rested an elbow on his knee, his chin cupped in an open hand. His lower lip protruded in a typical boy pout. Ike Mitchell found him there as long shafts of orange speared through the trees and the eastern sky turned blue to purple.
You're looking sort of glum. Want to talk about it?
Yes, sir. No, sir. Yeah. Yeah, I do, Ike.
Well, then, where do you want to start?
At the beginning, I guess. I should have gone with Smoke.
Now, don't start on that again.
Bobby darted out a hand and put it on the foreman's arm to stay further complaint.
No, please, Ike. Let me tell it my way.
At Ike's dubious nod, Bobby went on.
I wanted to show Smoke and everyone that I was big enough to do a man's job. So, I should have gone. Because afterwards, I got to feeling like the other hands were laughing at me. That I was nothing but a little boy to them. Then when those men took Mom, I couldn't stand it any longer. See, if I had gone with Smoke, we would have moved a lot slower than him alone. And we could have been close enough to take after those devils right away. They went the same way Smoke did. You said so. We might have even run into them on the way, fought it out, and then they would never have taken my mother. Anyway, I could have been more useful than I am now. And I'm worried about her. I'm afraid something bad will happen.
Bobby's eyes filled and he fought to keep back the tears. Reminded of his own turmoils at the threshold of puberty, Ike impulsively reached out and hugged Bobby to him. With rough compassion, he ruffled the straw blonde hair.
Look now, Smoke knows you're a big man now. He'll be all mightily exercised over you coming along, but he'll know it was your worry over Miss Sally.
Mighty fine coffee, fellas.
Smoke set aside the tin cup and turned to the real reason for his visit to the camp of Zeke and Ezra.
Could you two carry a message for me?
Yeah, I don't know why not. Who's it go to?
There's two people, really. Chief Tom Brokenhorn of the Shoshone and Chief Blackrobe of the Arapaho. They're camped on the Wind River Reservation. I'll write it out for you, and you can leave in the morning.
Well, can they read writing?
Tom Brokenhorn can. You'll have to tell Blackrobe.
All right. What's it going to say, this message?
That they are to send as many warriors as possible right away. They are to meet me to the east of Togarty Pass on the plain, 10 miles from Du Bois.
Say, Smoke, we sort of reckon to get in on that affair.
You still can. Ride back here with the Indians, and you'll be in plenty of time.
What are you fixing to do now?
I'll leave this afternoon to get another look at Du Bois.
Hoot-a-toot! Sounds to me like you're a sucker for danger.
Could be I'm the danger.
Smoke Jensen left the eastern grade to Togarty Pass shortly after the moon rose. Its pale silver light washed the land with enough brightness to see. He would be close to Du Bois before mid-morning, he figured. Thunder trotted along the well-used trail, which ran 5 miles north of the camp where Monte Carson and Ike Mitchell slept through the night, eager to reach Smoke's camp in Jackson's Hole the next day. Neither the ex-gunman nor the posse knew of the other's presence, and Smoke could have used them had he but known. Over the past 3 days, 14 more gunfighters and bounty hunters had drifted into Du Bois, which brought the total to well above 55. They dozed late in the mornings and lounged in the saloons through the afternoons and each night. With the town in the hands of the man who had hired them, most had not known such peace and security since childhood. Now, much to the disgust of Tim O'Rourke, most of the outlaw horde made the watering hole a sort of headquarters. Fully 36 men lounged in the saloon on a lazy, warm afternoon now. Half a dozen more had gone upstairs to some of the soiled doves. Most of them would be down before long, Tim knew, because for all their bragging about what badasses they were and what gifts they were to womanhood, they were actually more like little boys with short fuses. How different they were from Smoke Jensen. That thought gave O'Rourke pause. He wondered where Smoke was right then, what he was doing. In fact, nestled down into a depression outside Du Bois, a pair of field glasses to his eyes, Smoke Jensen was slowly sweeping the lenses along the buildings nearest to him. For 2 blocks, there were residences. All of them had 2 things in common, Smoke observed. No one worked in the flower beds, the gardens, or went to and from the stables at the rear of the lots. Only 2 had washing, which fluttered listlessly in an indifferent breeze on lines in the backyards. Yet each house had a scruffy-looking hard case propped back in a chair on the porch. He went back over them again, then a 3rd time.
The people who live there are prisoners in their own homes.
Then Smoke changed his point of focus to the first of the commercial buildings. He had once noted a greater density of outlaws among the people on the street he viewed now. They swaggered through the vanquished residents, who scurried away with furtive backward glances. Smoke spotted several faces he recognized from earlier encounters with Spectre's minions. He would have to move to sweep the main street. Fortunately, a shallow ravine ran parallel with the face of the town where Smoke observed. After he satisfied his curiosity enough, Smoke shifted into the fissure and worked north along it until he reached a culvert where the main roadway into town crossed it. Then, he removed his hat and raised up just enough to scan the main street with ease. What he saw deeply troubled him. In the same heartbeat, it relieved him of an earlier anxiety. At least now, he knew where Spectre held Sally. Heavily armed outlaws and roving patrols at 2 and 3 alertly prowled around the hotel. More sat in chairs on the balcony and under its canopy on the boardwalk. The saloons received good play too. Small wonder. A collection of this sort, used to some space between themselves and others, needed an outlet for the tension their closeness would surely create. Easing down, Smoke took out a sheet of paper and began to sketch in the location of each nest of hard cases with a stub of pencil. With that accomplished, he moved again. Throughout the remainder of the day, Smoke timed the movements of the outlaws, the positions of lookout posts, and the length of the watch duty. No doubt Spectre thought their presence would keep him from getting rough when he made his move to save Sally.
How little he knows.
When Smoke withdrew well into the night, he had an idea where every lookout had been placed, where Spectre himself spent the night, and how many men could be expected in the saloons. With however many guns he had at his disposal, Smoke decided he would go in after Sally at the time specified. That would provide time for the warriors to get here. Once he had her clear of town, Spectre and his gang would be swept out of there in a way that would give any who survived nightmares for the rest of their lives. Sally Jensen sat staring at her lamp-lit reflection in the window panes made mirrors by the blackness outside. Without warning, the door to her room opened. She tensed slightly, back unconsciously arching in preparation for a spring to flee or to attack. She was convinced that these rabble could sink to the lowest, vilest of crimes, given only the slightest provocation. Slowly, she turned her head to see who her faithful guard, Sam, had let enter. It turned out to be Victor Spectre. In one hand, he held a tray with covered dishes.
"I thought I would bring you your dinner. I brought a plate for myself as well."
He started for a small, sturdy, drop-leaf oak table.
"Thank you, but I'm not hungry."
Brushing aside her rejection, Spectre began laying out the plates.
You must eat to keep up your strength, my dear. It's roast loin of pork with potatoes and gravy, some garden greens, and even a slice of cherry pie. The cherries are locally grown and put up by my temporary host, the mayor's cook. I've brought an appropriate bottle of wine, and there will be coffee after.
I said I am not hungry.
A sharp pang in her stomach put the lie to that. Reluctantly, she had to admit the accuracy of his words.
Although I suppose you are right, I must maintain my strength in order to fight you vermin.
She went to the chair he held out for her. After seating her, Victor Spectre fussed about the table like a prissy waiter in a French restaurant. At last, he took his place and raised the knife and fork. Then he hesitated.
Perhaps you would prefer to give a blessing first.
Considering the circumstances, I hardly think I can be thankful for this food.
Ah, yes, I follow you. Well and good, then. You might as well commence. We do not want it getting cold.
Hesitantly, Sally began to eat. Throughout the meal, she noticed that Spectre seemed oddly fascinated with her. He eyed her askance for the most part. But occasionally, Sally would look up from cutting a piece of meat to find him staring. She held her peace through most of the meal, determined not to make this a pleasant occasion for her captor. His continued behavior finally broke the silence.
Tell me, Mr. Spectre.
Victor, please call me Victor.
Very well. Victor, tell me, has it been a while since you shared the company of a lady?
Spectre's schoolboy fascination faded into a scowl.
Your husband saw to that. I have been forced into the close company of only men for the past 5.5 years.
And your wife visit?
My wife passed on the year our son was 9. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this. Smoke Jensen murdered Trent and he killed my son!
Sally couldn't hide her expression of shocked disbelief.
Surely that can't be so. There has to be something you're not telling me. Perhaps something you don't even remember about the incident.
No, nothing. I was there. I witnessed it. The boy was already wounded, could not offer further resistance. Then your husband turned on me. His shot went high.
Unconsciously, Victor Spectre raised fingers to the white streak in his hair.
I was knocked unconscious. When I awakened days later, Trenton had already been buried.
Sally touched her napkin to her lips, mind searching for something with which to mitigate the indictment against Smoke.
Victor, couldn't the shock of being shot and knocked unconscious have distorted your recollection of how events transpired?
Oddly impacted by this unconventional suggestion, the turmoil it created could be clearly read on the face of Victor Spectre. He considered it a moment, but then hardened his features again.
Not at all. I know what I saw. That is why I have shown such fascination with you. You are so refined, such a lady, that I wonder how you can live with so notorious a murderer as Smoke Jensen.
Smoke Jensen is not a murderer, and I do love and live with him quite nicely, thank you.
I'm sorry, you don't understand. What I want to know is what Smoke Jensen is like as a husband.
Don't be impertinent.
It is not idle curiosity. I did not intend to intrude on a husband and wife's conjugal privacy. Yet the fact remains, you will be a widow soon, and all you will have is memories of Smoke Jensen. When that is the case, you will find that you have certain needs that, yes, that I will be more than able to fulfill.
Oh!
Sally Jensen sprang to her feet and snatched up the tray and its unfinished meal, which she hurled at Victor Spectre.
Oh!
Then she slapped his face. Well satisfied with his survey of Du Bois, Smoke Jensen returned to his temporary camp in a hidden canyon 5 miles from the town. To his surprise, he found 15 Shoshone warriors waiting there. Running Snake, their war leader, turned out to be a grandson to Chief Tom Brokenhorn, and he spoke English well.
We have been watching the bad men who camp in the White Village. I sent a message to my grandfather to have warriors come if you need.
Smoke found it hard to see Brokenhorn as a grandfather, even though he was already one as well.
I will probably need right enough. When will you send for warriors?
Already. On the day we see White Wolf sneak into town.
That meant Zeke and Ezra would run upon him on the trail, Smoke figured.
I also have word that some worthless dogs of the Arapaho are a handspan of sun behind us. They will be here in the morning.
Given that the two tribes had been traditional enemies for centuries, Smoke could never figure out why the government, in its infinite wisdom, had put them together on the same reservation. Maybe the land-greedy politicians hoped they would wipe out one another. Smoke gave off worrying about it to make his guests coffee with lots of sugar. Then he put some meat on the cooked fire.
We will have coffee and talk. Then we eat.
It is good. When you last visited our camp, I was not yet born. There are many things I would like to know.
Smoke Jensen cut his sharp gaze to Running Snake.
Like what got these fellows riled up at me enough to tear into that village?
Yes, there is that. And other things.
Morning brought the aroma of brewing coffee and frying bacon. It also brought 28 Arapaho warriors, Zeke and Ezra along with them. That surprised Smoke, who made quick to ask about it. A grinning Zeke explained.
And we ran into these fellas just south of the pass. They told us that they'd been following a large party of Shoshone and white men for 2 days. So, Ez and me figured everybody what was up for this tussle was already accounted for. We rode along.
When we got to the pass, we cut a sign of Injuns and whites riding together. So we left a stone cairn telling them where to come. They should be here sometime today.
That gives me a larger force than I'd hoped for. But I don't have any more days to spare. Today's the deadline. I have to show myself in Du Bois or Sally will be killed tomorrow.
You don't really think that fella would make good on his threat, do you? Why, he'd lose his advantage.
You and I know that, and so does he. But I'm afraid the one in charge is unable to think clearly right now. He might consider it just deserts for me, even though he would die in the process.
I make it a good 16 white men and about 30 Shoshone.
He'll die then, no matter what happens to Sally.
What jolted Smoke even more came when the mixed band arrived shortly after noon. Smoke almost blew the head off his foreman when Ike Mitchell and the Sugarloaf Hands sprinted ahead of the approaching Shoshone warriors into a box canyon. And he received yet another surprise when he saw Monty Carson and Hank Evans coming along. He vigorously shook his old friend's hand.
I have to leave soon, Monty. But there's time for a cup of coffee.
Leave? For where?
Du Bois. Victor Spector has given me 2 days to turn myself in to save Sally's life. This is the second day.
Monty had heard about Sally's kidnapping from Ike. He had cursed and kicked rocks and slammed a fist into a pine trunk at the time. Now that fire lit in his eyes again.
You're not going alone.
That's what he expects, but I don't think so. This many people on hand calls for a change of plan.
Monty and Ike looked wary. Ike was the first to take up the burden.
There's one person along you may want to cook up some special plans for, Smoke.
Who's that?
Bobby.
What? What the bloody blue hell did you let him come along for?
I didn't exactly let him come along. He insisted. The kidnapping of Sally was sort of the last straw for him.
Before Smoke could hunt down the boy and unload on him, Ike took him aside and told him of his conversation with Bobby. It cooled the anger Smoke had built up. Carefully, he thought over what he would say while he sought out the lad, who had wisely decided to avoid Smoke notice. But Smoke found Bobby at the picket line, industriously brushing out his horse.
Bobby.
Smoke?
Bobby, I'm not happy with this. You can be sure of that. Although I think I understand why you came along.
Yes, sir. But now you're going to send me back?
No. You can stay. But you'll have to stay behind in this camp until the fighting's over. Having Sally's life in danger is enough. Too much, in fact. The risk of putting you in harm's way is more than I could bear. Well, at first I thought of you as a nuisance. Since then, I've come to love you every bit as much as my own natural sons.
You do? You really do? I thought you looked at me as Nothing but a little boy. Someone to take fishing and teach about ranching. Oh! Mm.
Oh.
Impulsively, they found themselves in a tight embrace. Smoke seemed reluctant to end it. Pride in Bobby's indomitable spirit filled him. At last, he let the boy go.
I have to do some planning with Monty, Ike, and the war chiefs.
Then what, Smoke?
I'm going to Du Bois to get Sally.
With Zeke's admonition that Spectre would not be crazy enough to eliminate his one insurance policy by killing Sally the next day, fresh in his mind, and in light of the large number of men on hand, Smoke made drastic changes in his plans. If he didn't show up by the deadline, it would put them further off balance, he reasoned. Yeah, Smoke figured that a little havoc in Du Bois might also have a beneficial effect. Shortly before dusk, he and Zeke rode out of the canyon mouth and started for Du Bois. Already confused by Smoke's failure to appear in town, Spectre and his underlings would not be in good shape for a dawn attack after a sleepless night. Smoke and Zeke reached a spot from where they could observe everything going on along the main street. Patiently, they waited out the long hours until alertness slackened. Then they made their move. Smoke had earlier pointed out to Zeke several sentries who dozed off. Silently, moccasins were placed in boots. Smoke and Zeke ghosted in. Solid blows with the flat of tomahawk blades quickly rendered the thugs unconscious. Smoke and Zeke each dragged their man off into the grass to bind and gag him. Then they set off after another group of laggards.
Over there, there's two of them.
At a creeping pace, Smoke and Zeke closed in to within 10 yards.
By dang, I'm getting sick and tired of this. Who are we watching out for?
Smoke Jensen, of course.
Would you know him to see him? I don't blame him for not coming in today. Man, it'd have to be a fool to ride into town bristling with guns like this one. I'd kind of like to come face to face with him, shake his hand, and tell him how smart I think he is for keeping out of Spectre's clutches.
You can if you want to, Yunker. He's standing right in front of you.
The first gun hawk came to his boots.
With Smoke Jensen in front of who? Where is he?
Right here.
Again, they dragged their senseless burdens out into the tall grass and tied them securely. Zeke edged over to Smoke.
I reckon that's enough, don't you?
Yeah. On this side, we need to take a few more.
By 2 o'clock in the morning, they had taken out 7 more lookouts. Then, Smoke and Zeke split up and moved to positions on opposite sides of the town. A few late hangers-on still commiserated in their cups at the saloon.
That Smoke Jensen's a coward, that's what he is, Nate.
I don't know. Don't seem like him.
That wolf's mighty close. Oh, goddamn.
God damn! They are entirely too close.
Holy shit! I'm sleeping upstairs with one of them gals tonight.
Fire! There's a shed of fire on the edge of town!
My God, now what caused that?
Nate Miller gave Huntoon a cold gaze.
Smoke Jensen. Who else could it be?
Smoke Jensen and Zeke Duncan pulled back into the darkness after that to get some sleep before the big attack. Behind them, the abandoned tumble-down shack continued to burn. From her confinement inside the sheriff's office, Sally Jensen heard the commotion outside. It cheered her more than anything had in a week. When the animal calls began, she had rushed to the small barred window of the jail cell from the chair in which she had been sitting. She had been brought to the cell block at sundown when Smoke failed to appear. Now she knew why Smoke had not come in earlier. Smoke was out there now. Sally knew that as certainly as she knew her heart still beat. He had not given up, and he would not make some useless sacrifice of himself to save her. The time would come soon, and she had to be ready to act. Yet in the back of her head, she worried for Smoke's safety.
Unlock her cell now!
Spectre entered the cell a barely contained fury. Roughly, he shot out an arm and grabbed her elbow in a steel grip.
This is all your fault. Smoke Jensen is on a rampage out there, and it's all because you are here.
And who is it that had me brought here?
Your husband is being a nuisance and has to be taught a lesson. It's a pity you have to be part of that lesson. I had decided to give him more time.
That part was a lie.
Now that is not possible. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock precisely, you will be taken out on the balcony of the hotel and shot to death.
Dawn's light had not yet turned pink from gray when Smoke Jensen and his volunteers approached Du Bois. At his suggestion, the Shoshones and Arapahoes kept well out of sight, spreading out on the north and south flanks of the town. From a distance, Smoke swept the streets with field glasses. He spotted a few sleepy hard cases on the streets. All of them drooped from lack of rest. All looked in a low state of readiness.
I say we attack at once. We won't have a better time. Surprise is still ours. We'll swing through this group of houses. Take the main business section in a wide sweep. If it'll make you feel better, Monty, we'll call out to them to surrender. But at the least sign of resistance, we'll kill them where they stand.
What about Sally?
I'll find her. As a matter of fact, I have the notion Spectre will bring her to me.
Monty checked the face of his turnip watch.
Time to be doing it.
Yep. Hank knows what to do.
He'll attack from the far side when he hears the first shot. Yeah!
That first discharge did not take long. Three hard cases came on the run from houses along a neat tree-lined street. One of them had seen Smoke before.
That's Smoke Jensen! Get him!
In the lead, Smoke took a hurried shot. His slug went a bit wide, punched through the shoulder of one outlaw before the gunman could clear leather. Another appeared to trip over an invisible rope and sprawled in the gravel of the road, blood spewing from a gaping wound in his back. The third brigand, the one who had given the alarm, hastily reholstered his six-gun and threw his hands in the air. Those in the lead went on by him. Someone in the rear could gather him in. From the far side of town, Smoke heard the gunfire. Hank Evans and the remainder of the Sugarloaf hands would be streaming through to the business section. Another block and those on this side would join them. Then they would see. Smoke could only trust that it went the way he had planned it. Ahead, he could see the balcony of the hotel. Three small figures stood on it. The one in the middle was that of a woman. Ice abruptly filled Smoke's stomach. Another half block and the features became identifiable. Much as he wished otherwise, the woman was Sally. Smoke recognized Victor Spectre's one side of her. He held the muzzle of a Smith & Wesson American to her temple. At once, Smoke gave the signal to halt the attacks.
Take it easy, Spectre. I came to see my wife was safe.
Why wouldn't she be?
You said that if I didn't come within 2 days, you'd kill her the third.
Why, I believe you're right. But now you are here. If you are prepared to give yourself up, we can discuss the release of your wife.
Release her now, and we can talk about my surrender.
No, Smoke!
She's right. The answer is no. Whether you cannot count or you are arrogant, I made up my mind. I decided that she dies at 8 o'clock this morning. Now that you are here, the situation has changed again. That gives you...
Spectre fished his watch from a vest pocket while his henchman held Sally.
My, how time flies. 1 hour and 40 minutes. You have that time to pull back your men and give up to me, or she dies as scheduled.
Smoke Jensen led the way out of Du Bois. To Monty's urgent questions, Smoke only said to wait and see. Smoke met first with the Shoshone and Arapaho leaders. Running Snake listened to Smoke with interest, made a couple of suggestions, and then asked how Smoke expected to make it work.
It all depends on getting Zeke and Ezra into position to cover the hotel. From there on, we'll have to play it by their lead. All you need to worry about is to be ready when I get Sally away from Spectre.
At 10 minutes prior to the appointed time, Smoke Jensen walked Thunder down the wide main street of Du Bois. An eerie silence held over the town. Residents looked away as Smoke rode by, ashamed in their helplessness. But that would change if all went the way Smoke intended. He had instructed Ike to have the men take all surplus arms and ammunition and provide them to the populace as the hands fought their way through the residences of Du Bois. The citizens had fought to recover their homes once before. He had little doubt they had changed in only a few years. This time, they had the added impetus of having the outlaws quartered among them. No one would like that sort of thing, and they would be given an opportunity to even the score. When he reached a block's distance, Smoke saw Sally once again on the balcony. This time, two hard cases held her arms well away from her body or the reach of a well-aimed foot. Smoke saw that two of those responsible for this situation had chosen to gather on the covered porch of the saloon before the double batwing doors. No doubt they had come to gloat and claim his head. As promised, Smoke appeared to be unarmed, his holsters empty. Victor Spector stepped forward as Smoke Jensen reached the corner of the intersection.
There has been another change of plans, I regret to say. We thought it to be too delicious an irony to overlook. This bright morning, you are going to witness your wife being shot to death. Then you shall be killed with the same weapon. Only slowly, with each of us placing bullets at likely places. Your ankles, wrists, knees, elbows, hips, shoulder joints, your abdomen, the right side of your chest, then the left, and last, your head. By then, several days will have passed, during which we shall enjoy ourselves enormously. Oh, how rude of me. You recall my associate, I'm sure, Ralph Tinsdale? Unfortunately, you shot Olin Buckner. He's looking on from his sickbed in the hotel above. We are three men whom you have terribly wronged, and for that wronging, you must now pay.
Get on with it, you windbag son of a bitch.
According to his plan, Smoke had drawn near enough to the balcony for Sally to easily jump to the rump of thunder. Smoke cut his eyes to those of his wife in a meaningful glance. Suddenly, Sally's two guards pitched forward, victims of Zeke's and Ezra Sharp's buffalo rifles. Sally darted toward the rail. She vaulted over it and dropped to the skirt of the saddle on Thunder's back.
Stop them!
Sally yanked her .38 Colt Lightning free from the rear waistband of her husband and fired on Spectre. Victor Spectre and Ralph Tinsdale dived in an undignified manner onto the worn boards of the porch. By then, Smoke had freed the .45 Colt, which had also been concealed at the small of his back. His first slug cut the hat from the head of the astounded Victor Spectre. Every thug present went for his gun. Sally held on to Smoke with one hand and gamely discharged two rounds that quickly wrote an end to the checkered career of Finn Brock. The Arapaho and Shoshone warriors created a diversion that allowed Smoke Jensen to take advantage of an opening in the gathered ranks of criminal slime. He bolted through. Arrows struck flesh in the chest, stomachs, and throats of many a hardened rogue. Thunder gained momentum and drew a wider gap between the human garbage and the priceless cargo the Palouse Stallion bore. More gunshot crackled as the Sugarloaf hands invaded the residences of Du Bois and shot down the toughs who had elected not to watch the destruction of the wife of Smoke Jensen. For all their villainous ways, they had retained their respect for women, but it did them little good now as the vengeance-hungry ranch hands poured round after round into their hastily assembled ranks. Some of them broke and ran, escape a way higher priority than any reward they might receive. In all this confusion, Smoke and Sally quickly rode to safety. The entire confrontation had taken less than 3 minutes, Smoke figured, when they cantered across the small bridge at the west end of Du Bois. Not bad at all. Behind him, the volunteer fighters pulled back to make ready for the final assault. Not a one of the three responsible for this encounter are gonna escape alive. Smoke Jensen had decreed it.
This is not a setback, goddammit, let alone a defeat!
That's right. We still hold the town, and Smoke Jensen will have to come to us if he intends to do anything about it.
Victor Specter rounded on Tinsdale, face red with rage.
That's the problem. Smoke Jensen will absolutely come after us now. His wife is safe. He has those damned Indian allies and nothing to lose.
Calm down, Victor. Quite the contrary, I would think. Taken from Smoke Jensen's viewpoint, why do anything more? He has his wife safe and sound. Why not simply pack up and go home?
Because Smoke Jensen does not play live and let live. He will come. He has a large enough force and we have taken losses. He knows that. When he came after me, he had no way of knowing that Trenton and I would be alone in that barn. Yet Jensen came without a single other man.
Well, damn it. We should have killed that woman when we had the chance.
No, Ralph. Then we would have had an insanely furious man on our hands. One who would not have stopped at burning down the entire town, if necessary, to get to us. What we should have done was to have Smoke Jensen backshot and not stand around a gloat. The fact remains, Jensen will be coming. I want you to have the men ready for an attack at any time, and see that Olin is made as comfortable as possible. If he is up to it, give him a rifle so he can use it from his sickbed. We need every gun we can muster.
Mom! Oh, Mom!
Bobby ran to Sally Jensen with outstretched arms, his light blonde hair flopping on a round head. His hat spilled off in his excited discovery of his adopted mother among those who returned from town.
Bobby!
Mother and son hugged delightedly. Then Sally broke the embrace and stood the boy before her.
You disobeyed Smoke and myself alike. I'm disappointed, Bobby. No, that isn't true. I'm delighted to see you. For a while there, I didn't think I would ever see you again.
Smoke walked over.
We're going to have to stop meeting like this, my dear. People will begin to talk.
Is that all you have to say to me? Not hello or glad to see you?
No, it's not all. I also got to tell you that if you'd had that muzzle of that lightning any closer to my head when you popped off 3 rounds at the Lamner brothers, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Smoke grabbed her and gave her a mighty hug that lifted Sally's feet off the ground.
It's so good to have you here. For a while there, I actually worried that it wouldn't work.
What? The famous Smoke Jensen worried about a little thing like that? Oh, Smoke Jensen, I love you so. I never lost hope that you would come for me.
Coming for you is one thing. Getting you out unscratched is quite another. I've heard about it from Mike and the Hands, but tell me, how did it really happen? How did you let it?
Oh, darn it, they caught me at the sink, away from my purse and gun. If they would have come 20 minutes earlier while I was shelling peas, there isn't one of them that would have left there alive. As it is, a couple of them didn't. And there's one I owe a lot of gratitude to. His name is Sam, something or other. If you can spare him, do so.
Sally described Sam Hutchins and told Smoke how he served as her protector when the others wanted to have their way with her. Smoke agreed that he definitely deserved to live if possible. Then he excused himself and joined the other leaders for a short conference on how they would finish the remainder of the outlaw army.
I don't need to tell you that we have to hit them hard, and all at once. First the sentries on the edge of town. Then we close off the only streets that lead out and move in on the center of the business district.
He went on to give various assignments of specific buildings to the engines and ranch hands. Zeke and Ezra, he again positioned where they could bring long-range covering fire on the hotel. With that accomplished, and satisfied that the outcome would be in their favor, Smoke called for a good hot meal before they went back to Du Bois. Running Snake looked across the expanse of tall grass to the village of the white men. He had grown up longing to do what he would in a minute be doing. As a small child, he had sat at the feet of the elders listening to their exciting tales of sweeping raids through the villages, Arapaho villages, Absarika villages, Sioux villages, and even white villages. They sang songs of the far-off Tumunga, Assiniboine, Modoc, and Hurons, who burned to the ground many settlements, villages, and even towns of the whites. The descriptions of flames leaping high had thrilled him. Even the admonition from Smoke Jensen to leave the people in their wood lodges alone and fight only the outlaws did not detract from Running Snake's expectations.
This day will be sung about for many seasons to come.
He waited only the signal to attack. The men had painted for war. Their ponies wore feathers and ribbons braided in their tails and manes. Handprints, circles, and lightning streaks in war paint protected the animals from the bullets of the enemy. When the signal at last came, they would all know greatness. And then it came. Five shots blasted across from them. Running Snake raised his lance and threw back his head. He heeled his pony in the ribs, and the close-coupled mount sprang forward. Behind him, 28 warriors urged their horses to a gallop. Ahead, gaping residents of Du Bois pulled back into their houses and ducked low, or flattened out on the floors. To their utter amazement, the charging engines rode on past without firing a shot, at least not until a handful of outlaws offered resistance. Then arrows flew, old trade rifles barked, ancient percussive revolvers, their brass fittings worn thin, snapped in anger, and put balls from 36 to 44 calibers into the chests and faces of the enemy. One vermin took an arrow in the thigh and dropped to one knee. Before he could raise his 45 Colt and fire again, Running Snake drove the long leaf-bladed head of his lance through the vulnerable chest. The flint point bursted out of the dying thug's back, a foot of the shaft with it. The force of the powerful arm of Running Snake and the galloping pony ran the tip into the ground and pinned the writhing ruffian, an insect specimen on a display card. Abandoning the spear, Running Snake waved his arms to direct warriors into the intersecting street. Before he knew it, the Shoshone leader found himself at the edge of the business district. Outlaws swarmed in confusion. Dust rose to obscure everything. Powder smoke wafted heavily on an indifferent breeze. Quickly, Running Snake dismounted and brought his Spencer carbine to his shoulders. When the angry face of an armed white man came into the sights, Running Snake squeezed off a round. It blew away the lower jaw of the outlaw and sent him reeling away down the street. Another quickly filled that empty space, face contorted by rage, and he charged toward Running Snake with flames spitting from a six gun, while the Shoshone worked the lever action to open the breech and insert another paper cartridge. With too little time, Running Snake tried to bring up his weapon as a club. Suddenly, Big Sky was there, smashing down the tomahawk. The thug splashed the roof post of the saddlery shop with his blood and brains. Running Snake completed loading, adding a percussion cap to the nipple, and looked around. To his surprise, he saw they had advanced half a block. It was not going to take long now. White Beaver could hardly contain his Arapaho brothers. Several curvetted their ponies in nervous circles. He vaguely believed it not to be right to have to wait for the white men to start the fighting, especially two times. White Beaver was unaware that his thoughts echoed those of Running Snake. It would be so easy to race through these white lodges and burn everything. Why kill only some of those in the village? And why fight as an ally to the Shoshone? A spatter of gunfire from the town lifted the restraint on his warriors, and they streamed into town from the north. Victor Specter quickly learned from his mistakes. Several marksmen with long-range rifles had been stationed on the roofs of two-story buildings in the downtown area. From there, they could make things uncomfortable for those hands closing in on the outlaw band. At least until one got careless and exposed himself to the still-keen eyesight of Ezra Sampson. Dust puffed up from the vest of the hard case, and his head snapped back.
Gotcha, you bastard!
Immediately, two of the sharpshooters turned their attention toward the old mountain man.
Oh, dang it! You done hauled my shoulder!
Ezra's neck shot went far wide to the mark, but no such condition afflicted Zeke Duncan. He promptly accounted for another of the rooftop shooters. The man's back arched, and he flopped face first on the slate roof. Then he slid down the edge and off. He landed on the ground. Now Ezra was back on his mark. Smoke was on his feet, studying the ever-narrowing area where Spectre and his henchmen could still find shelter. Two thugs broke cover from inside the watering hole saloon. With Smoke Jensen looking on, Ike Mitchell spun around the alley side of the general store and shot one rogue through the breastbone. The other thug spun at Ike, just as Ike's six-gun cylinder hung up on a backed-out primer.
Hey, you son of a bitch! Over here!
Immediately, the fast gun turned toward the sound of Smoke's voice. His eyes widened when he recognized Smoke Jensen. Smoke also registered an eye squint of surprise when he saw the features of Whitewater Bill Longbow. No slouch as a gunfighter, Longbow had been rumored to have gone into the land swindle game and left gunslinging behind. Perhaps the amount of the price on Smoke's head or the chance to up his sagging reputation by claiming that head had been too tempting for Whitewater Bill. Whatever the case, Longbow was about to eternally lament his decision. Suddenly, Farley Huntoon rushed through the bat wings of the watering hole.
I got you, Jensen! By God, I do!
Smoke had barely started to turn when Huntoon raised his Merwin and Hulbert 44 to make a back shot. Even with this head start, Smoke beat Huntoon to the first round fired. The fat 45 slug sped from the muzzle of Smoke's Colt and slammed into the protruding gut of the hillbilly outlaw. Huntoon's mouth and eyes went wide and round. Enormous pain erupted among his organs, but in spite of that, he managed to trigger his weapon. Huntoon's bullet entered the side of Smoke's whipcord jacket and bit into flesh to form a short tunnel right below the skin. Fire radiated through the body of Smoke Jensen. He took a single staggering step before he eared back the hammer again and put another deadly projectile into Farley Huntoon. This time the hot lead destroyed the lower lobe of Farley's right lung. Choking on his own blood, the West Virginia trash triggered yet a third cartridge. With a shower of splinters, the slug buried itself in the boardwalk between the widespread boots of Smoke Jensen. A black scrim, harbinger of things to come, settled over Farley's vision. He worked numb lips and tried to gulp back a fountain of sanguine fluid that threatened to erupt out of his mouth.
I think I've died.
Smoke Jensen watched the Merwin and Holbert drop from fingers no longer able to hold it.
Not yet, but you will.
A flurry of shots from the general store drew Smoke's attention. Leaving the dying Huntoon behind, he headed that way. Six Sugarloaf hands had some of Spectre's minions pinned down inside the store. Before Smoke could reach the establishment and size up how to drive them out, Stumpy Granger started to hop on one foot, holding the other in a gnarled hand.
Ah! Damnation! Bastard in there shot off a couple of my toes!
Then he dropped the injured foot to the ground, took aim, and fired a shotgun at a wisp of dark shadow that crossed behind the shot-out display window. Stumpy reloaded his shotgun. Smoke made a quick assessment and spoke to his hands.
There's seven of us now. Three of you take the alley. Go this way. There's no windows along that side. And head around back. Stumpy can stay here and lay down covering fire on the front. Perk, Buford, Handy, when you've had time to get into place, fire a shot and we'll charge them together.
5 minutes went by, during which time Smoke wondered if the hands had run into a silent ambush.
That's it, Stumpy.
Stumpy opened up with his shotgun, alternated with rounds from a six-gun, while Smoke Jensen, Jules Thibodeau, and Mort Oliver rushed the storefront. It became a mad scramble for the outlaws inside. Nine hard cases tripped over one another, fired blind shots into ceiling and floor, and tried to force their way out the rear. Hot lead from the Sugarloaf hands met them. Then, Smoke and the two men with him entered the front with six guns blazing. Three of the trapped thugs tried to resist. They died before the eyes of their comrades in a swift, deadly duel. One gun hawk, smarter than most of them, laid his Colt on a counter and raised his hands.
There ain't gonna be any big payoff for us. I'm quitting right now. Don't shoot. I give up.
In 3 minutes, it was over. Stumpy Granger took charge of the prisoners. Smoke had a look around the unnaturally quiet town. He soon discovered that all of the gunmen had either been killed, captured, or had fled. Except for a few, who he knew would hang close to Spectre Tinsdale and Buckner. That left Smoke Jensen with only one thing left to do. Hunt down the three responsible for all this destruction, misery, and death. Smoke's attention centered on the Water and Hole Saloon. While Smoke made preparations to storm the building from its blind side entrance in the rear, using his engine allies to pour a withering fire into the front, a stout, florid-faced man with a shock of white hair and thin mustache and a large shotgun approached in a dignified manner.
Mr. Jensen, you remember me, don't you? I'm Irving Spawn, the banker. I helped you the last time you had to do this.
Oh, yeah. You did well, as I recall. It looks like you put in a hand this time, too.
That I did. And I came to offer more help if needed. I have 15 men from town, all well-armed, who want to be in on putting an end to this terrible affair.
There's not much to do, Mr. Spawn. We're going after the three responsible right now. They and a handful of gunmen are in the saloon over there.
Well, we came to help. I suppose we could keep an eye on the second floor windows, and there's a door up there on the side.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing this. Pick your spots and we'll get started.
4 minutes later, the Arapaho and Shoshone warriors sent a shower of arrows in through the shattered casements. Some of the outlaws showed themselves in the window of the upper story, only to be shot away from their vantage points by the townsmen. Smoke Jensen let the softening up go on for a full 10 minutes. Then, he ordered the ranch hands forward as the outside firing dwindled to nothing. Smoke personally led the assault on the side door. Hank Evans used his burly shoulder to smash through the thin, poorly secured portal. Smoke rushed in at once and skidded to a halt. He found himself face to face with Ralph Tinsdale, who held a shot-barreled 10-gauge shotgun pointed directly at Smoke's chest. Smoke Jensen reacted automatically, and instantly, he put a bullet between the eyes of Ralph Tinsdale. Smoke swung to his right to confront Gus Yeager. Suddenly, Smoke felt a powerful blow in his lower right side. His shot went wide of the mark, only nicking the Prussian gunfighter in his left upper arm. A quick glance showed Victor Spector on the landing, a smoking revolver in one hand. At the present, Smoke had no time for Spector, who had just tried to shoot him in the back. He returned his attention to Yeager, who unlimbered two shots at Smoke, both of which missed. Smoke fired again, aiming at the center of mass on the chest of Gus Yeager. The bullet went home and shattered the breastbone of the gang foreman. Gus Yeager took two unsteady steps backward and abruptly sat in a sturdy oak captain's chair. He looked foolishly down at his .44 Colt Frontier, as though he didn't know its function. Then, remembering, he raised it to aim at Smoke Jensen. Smoke's bullet slammed into the face of Gus Yeager to make an exclamation point of the gun hawk's long patrician nose. The chair went over backward, and Gus Yeager sprawled in the clutches of Father Death. Smoke's attention returned to the stairwell. Victor Spector had disappeared onto the second floor. Favoring the wound in his side and the stinging from arm and back, Smoke limped as he followed after Spector. Every nerve screamed caution as Smoke Jensen climbed the stairway. Near the top, he bent as low as his injuries would allow and presented the least silhouette possible when he edged over the second floor landing. When no bellow of gunfire challenged him, Smoke came upright and stepped into the hallway. To add to his irritation, he found every door closed to him. However he chose to proceed, he had the sinking sensation that he would select the wrong door. A quick glance to the rear showed him a narrow, steep stairway now covered by hands from the sugar loaf. That decided him. Smoke turned to his right and went to the front of the building. There, he began a game of cat and mouse, seeking the villainous man behind so much misery. The first door he opened yielded up only three corpses. At the second door, one dead man there. Smoke moved to the next door. He felt resistance. A lock had been set against him. He stepped to the side, raised his left foot, and readied himself. With all the force he could put behind it, he drove his boot into the portal behind the cast iron lock mechanism. From the bed, a thoroughly frightened, soiled dove stared at him while she clutched a sheet to her bosom.
Sorry, the wrong room. Are there any more of you up here?
Yes, two or three, I think.
Thank you. I'll try not to scare them as much.
Banishing the vision of rounded silken shoulders, Smoke went on with his search. He found the next two rooms empty, then got a look at a pair of scarlet sisters in bloomers and shifts who hugged each other in the middle of the room.
Excuse me.
Room after room proved to be empty. Smoke had only taken three steps past the last one he had inspected, and the door to it swung open again. His boots removed, Victor Spector stepped out into the hallway on stockinged feet. He held at the ready a Smith & Wesson 44, which he raised slightly to make a perfect backshot on Smoke Jensen. How much he would have liked to make Jensen suffer, but he believed it best to simply get it over and escape. Carefully, he lined up in the sights, but that flicker of motion, reflected in the glass chimney of a kerosene lamp, alerted Smoke Jensen to the danger. Instantly, Smoke dropped to one knee, his Colt Peacemaker on the rise as he turned toward his would-be assassin. Slammed into the wall, Spectre's slug went wild down the hall. He fought back pain and cocked his weapon again. Shoved back through the open door, Spectre went to all fours and struggled dimly to stay alive and rise. Smoke filled the open doorway. Spectre was waiting. The wound cut meat from the muscular underside of Smoke's left armpit. Then, Spectre watched as Smoke's arm came up in slow motion. The world of Victor Spectre washed a brilliant red. Scarlet changed to dazzling white, and then blackness. Shot through the head, Victor Spectre died without ever recognizing the error of his ways.
Smoke, you okay?
Come on up, Monty. I just killed Victor Spectre. We have to find what else is up here. One last room to check.
They headed to the last room at the head of the hall. Smoke stood to one side of the door, 45 at the ready. Monty turned the knob and flung the panel inward. Smoke spun around the jamb and into the room. There, a feeble Olin Buckner tried to raise a Winchester and fired Smoke Jensen. A Shoshone arrow protruded from his left shoulder and hampered his effort. Smoke crossed the room to the bed and yanked the rifle out of Buckner's weak grasp.
I haven't seen you for a while, Buckner. Can't say you're looking better than ever.
You bastard!
Smoke examined the man. The local doctor had done a good job. Outside of the arrow, it appeared that the bullet wound Smoke had given him was healing well. It showed not a sign of angry red swelling that would indicate infection. That pleased Smoke Jensen mightily.
It looks like you'll most likely live to meet the hangman, Buckner. If it's any consolation, I won't enjoy watching that. Public executions have never been my idea of having fun.
A lot of good that does me.
I'm sure it doesn't overjoy you. Now, where's the loot your gang accumulated?
To hell with you. If that damned Indian hadn't shot me, I would have killed you the moment you came through the door.
You're not good enough. Never mind, we'll find it. And we'll do it before bringing the doctor to deal with that arrow.
Buckner paled.
You can't do that! I'm your prisoner!
One look at the stern, unrelenting expression of Smoke Jensen, and Buckner's appeal died.
There's a door on the balcony. It's locked. We put everything in there.
Marty! Go get the doctor! And take your time.
Wait, look here!
Zeke Duncan stared open-mouthed at the improvised strong room they had just forced open.
Must be a fortune here. No, three fortunes.
Light through the doorway gave a soft glow to stacks of gold and silver ingots. Bags of gold and neat rows of paper currency filled tables jammed tightly together. Enough money to boggle the minds of nearly anyone. Nursing his wounded shoulder, Ezra peered over the shoulder of his partner.
Ooh-wee. You ask me? My lies, how it's all smokes now.
No. He has to go back to the places they undoubtedly robbed on the way here. The banks and stores and stage lines can be identified, and what remains divided among them. Which reminds me, whatever money we can find on these trash has to be the wages Spectre was paying him. So we can round that up and add it to this.
Aww, it sure is a shame to get hands on so much gold and have to give it back.
At that moment, Sally joined the cluster on the balcony, accompanied by her bodyguard of Shoshone warriors and ranch hands. She extended her hands to take one of each aged mountain man.
At least you got to rescue a lady in distress.
She came forward and kissed each of them on the forehead. Crimson rose from the collarless necks of their shirts to the roots of their thinning gray hair. Zeke began to shuffle his moccasins, while beside him, Ezra dragged out a huge paisley kerchief and mopped at his face to hide his blush, and he rubbed the toe of one boot with the other.
Oh, gosh, ma'am. We was only doing what was right.
That's right, ma'am. We was only helping a friend. Twarn't nothing special.
Well, I love you both for it.
We'll rest up for a few days, then make ready to return to the Sugarloaf.
What? So soon? You've hardly just gotten here. We have to celebrate this great victory.
Sorry, Irving, but there's a spring branding to tend to, and the herd needs culling for sale. Horses don't wait for people.
Spawn looked hurt, but then he brightened.
Shut up the way you are. You won't be going anywhere for a while. We'll still have a few days to whoop it up.
Smoke Jensen cut his eyes to those of his wife. He saw the anticipatory gleam there, and he read it correctly.
Yes, I'm sure we will.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man, 16, Spirit of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1996, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Tim Carlin, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Getman, David Korn, Ren Casey, Jeff Baker, Joe Brack, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Michael Glenn, Thomas Penn, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Graybill, Tony Nam, Christopher Shearer, James Konachek, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Peter Stray, Johann Detweiler, Chris Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Nathaniel Perry, Greg Reinhold, and Annette Savard. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supain. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Nathaniel Perry and Dwayne Beeman. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Additional music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Smoke Jensen theme by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Rose Elizabeth Supain. If you enjoyed Spirit of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, Sidewinder, and The Last Mountain Man series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, sit on back and keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
What is it?
There is something.
I feel it too. A scent in the air. Like death.
You are surprised that I would help to finance Abbot Orland's ascension?
That is the business of the Abelicans. I do not understand why we should choose to get involved.
Our relationship with the Abelicans will prove of utmost importance in the crucial time that will soon be before us. All is in place. I will be reborn, and you will be there to watch over me until we are again united. I know this because I have been reborn time and time again. And after you witness the great transcendence, you will rest easier at night, in full confidence that Yatol is with us every step.
Welcome, Fiend.
I have seen the chi. I have touched the chi. I have grasped it. I know it.
I had hoped that you would see it, Paganel. It is good that you have, for now there is a road before you.
I would walk the path of all colors, Master Chaos.
You understand the danger?
To wait is folly, for I am prepared.
Have you determined your road beyond that?
Dogai, I have seen the steps and the grasses in my dreams, and I know that I must return there.
Don't miss part one of the Demon Wars Saga Book 6, Transcendence, available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.